It's New Year's Eve, 1992. Rather than celebrating in the usual way, a hopeful young couple spent the day moving into their new home. Deb and Tony Pickman were excited to settle into this cute and cozy brick house, especially since the two were expecting a baby. The first few months in the home, located in Atchison, Kansas, were relatively quiet, but things began to change little by little. At first, they noticed the flickering of the lights. Though they did attribute this to the age of the home, built in the late 1800s, it was over 100 years old, and old houses have quirks. Then, the oven timer began to sound off pretty regularly, without having been set. The Pickmans still shrugged this off. Perhaps they kept bumping it by accident, or maybe it was faulty. One morning, the couple walked downstairs to start their day. They quickly realized all of their hanging photos had been turned upside down. It was just after the birth of their baby in June 1993 when they were out for a visit with family, and things escalated. After their visit, they returned home to find something peculiar in the nursery. It was not how they left it. All of the baby's stuffed animals had been placed on the floor in a circle, holding hands. This is Fright Life, a paranormal podcast, and on this episode, we will discuss the Sally House. After Deb and Tony Pickman returned home to find this strange sight in the nursery, their initial thought was that maybe their sister-in-law had left it there to be silly. She had been in the house while they were out, dropping off an item for the baby. But upon calling her, she claimed she didn't disturb anything in the home, and in fact didn't see anything on the floor of the nursery. Unsure what to make of this, they cleaned up the stuffed animals, turned out the light, and walked downstairs. But before they made it all the way down, the light in the nursery was back on. They asked Tony's brother Larry to come by. At first, nothing happened during his visit, but as soon as Larry was about to leave, they all headed downstairs to see him out, and they noticed one of the teddy bears left downstairs had been completely turned around. It had changed position without anyone down there. Worried someone was messing with them and that perhaps they were still in the house, they all began to search the home. They don't find anyone in the home, and Larry is shocked by this and tells them that the sister of his boss is actually a psychic. Perhaps they have a ghost, and he thinks it's a good idea to put them all in touch with one another. In the meantime, they call Tony's mom to update her on the happenings, and she shares that she recalls the daughter of a friend used to live in that home just a few years before they moved in. They used to complain that toys were often found on the floor, and the kids would always blame it on Sally, someone the owner thought was an imaginary friend. Soon after, the Pickmans are contacted by Barbara, the psychic. She lives in California, but offers to conduct a remote session. Barbara claims she can see the entity in their home and identifies her as a little girl named Sally.
Hey, welcome to Fright Life. We're your hosts, Joss and Monique.
Hello.
And on this episode, we are discussing the Sally House.
Yes, this is a creepy one, and it's pretty well documented and pretty well known by most of us in this community. The house is located in Atchison, Kansas. It was built in the late 1870s, and it's a two-story white brick home. It looks pretty unassuming, Like, definitely.
It's actually really cool.
Yeah, definitely like, old, but cute and quirky. Yeah. Yeah.
I would live there. I would live in that house. I mean, maybe it, like a less haunted version of the house. It's like recorded or like represented as one of the most haunted houses in the U.S.
Yes, for sure. And the history of the building is that it was built in around 1870 or 1871 by Irish immigrant Michael Croman Finney. He actually died in the house just a year after it was built, but left the home to his family. His son Charles became a doctor and lived in the house, possibly using the downstairs as offices and exam rooms, sure, and the upstairs as the living quarters. There are about 3 confirmed deaths in the home, according to record.
And we'll talk about that a little bit later on.
Yes. So right now, let's maybe recap this beginning timeline here.
Perfect.
So the Pickmans, Deb and Tony, are newlyweds expecting a baby. They move into the home December 31st, 1992.
Ooh, New Year's Eve move-in day. Like, that's what a day to choose for that to be. I don't know, it seems like a big event, kind of like.
Yeah, and it's sort of perfect, I think, because like the next day is the exactly start of a brand new like year. Yeah.
Amazing.
We moved into this place the day after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so, that's like, right.
Everyone was out shopping and...
Yeah, nobody could help us move in because they were all out at Black Friday sales. Yeah. That's funny.
But no, it was a nice time, I think. So they were, yeah, starting their life together. They have a baby on the way. It's a new year. And they spend the first, you know, few weeks to months furnishing the home and getting all settled in.
It's the perfect, like, fairy tale fresh start.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But things start to happen that at first they ignore and upon looking back are definite, like, precursors to the haunting activity that unfolds. They see, you know, the lights go off and on, the oven timer's going off, but they never set the oven timer. That stuff can be pretty explained. So they were right to think, like, okay, maybe this is just the quirky old building.
Old house stuff.
Right.
For sure.
And after a while, you do learn that. Like, we have things here that were like, we know what sounds are the house and what sounds to be right. Like, what was that?
Yeah.
But the pictures on the wall.
That's so
when
creepy.
They come down and they're all upside down. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
And also, Deborah reports that there are cold spots found, like, throughout the house. Another thing they sort of ignore at first, but makes sense later when they have more haunting activity.
Sure. Starting to perk up the old paranormal meter.
Yeah. So then their baby is born. They name him Taylor. And in June 1993, they're out visiting family when they return to find the nursery like that, with all the stuffies on the floor in a circle holding hands.
At that point, I feel like I would also be like, someone's pranking us.
Yeah,
like,
and that is what they think. Yeah, yeah.
For sure. And even they said that somebody, one of their relatives, had been in the house to, like, check out the nursery.
Yeah, their sister-in-law was dropping off, like, a high chair or a baby item while they were out. And she went up to see the nursery because, you know, this is all still kind of new.
Right.
The baby had just come. So she's checking it out. And she's like, no, I didn't do anything in the nursery. And also, nothing was on the floor when I was in there. Like, I would have noticed all the stuffies in a circle.
Like, yeah, that's a pretty obvious.
Right. She would have been like, interesting choice of decor. Knowing, like, the baby doesn't play with those yet. So what's the deal? So, yeah, then their brother comes over and they see, you know, one of the bears moves. Which, how many flippin' stuffed animals do they have already? Like, Olivia has so many because
right.
I went crazy with the whole display at the Disney store because they're so cute.
Yeah.
But you know what the Disney store has that our house does not? The, like, ring of the area where they're displayed.
Right.
If every house could have one of those, sure, grab all the stuffies. But guess what? You run out of space after a minute.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so you're talking about, like, the tiered,
yeah,
like,
the whole,
stuffy,
like, half ring that's, like, tiered up, and they're all in cute, like, in there. And they can just be thrown in there and still somehow look super cute.
Right.
Yeah, that doesn't exist here, so all the stuffies are, like, a problem once they get home.
Right. And especially when they start holding secret teddy bear seances, while nobody's home.
Yeah, that's when they're a real problem. You've got to really look into that. So that's what happened. The bear downstairs moved, was in a completely different position than when they had all gone upstairs. So upon returning down, I guess he was like turned facing the wall instead of just set nicely. And
what is it about things like in the corner, like facing the wall away from you, that makes them twice as creepy?
Yeah, because it's like a glitch. Yeah. Like even like if a person is just staring at the wall.
Oh, that's the Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
That's my favorite scary movie of all time, specifically because the very, spoilers, last scene where you see, it's, I think, Mike, and he's like,
just staring
just
at the
in
wall.
The corner. And it's just a quick glimpse. And it, like, even now I'm just like, huh. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, it's so, so creepy. It's a creepy visual. It's something that doesn't quite make sense. So our brains don't compute it. Like, why is someone doing that?
Yeah.
And it seems it can also be like that whole glitch in the matrix kind of thing. Like someone's just staring. Oh, and when we were kids, my sister used to sleepwalk, of my sisters. And so she would be facing the walls. Like in the middle of the night, we'd wake up and she's just like facing the closet, like a closed closet door. And one time she was like scratching at the closet, like to try and get in.
Dude, no way.
So creepy.
Trying to get into the closet.
Yeah, because I don't know, she's sleepwalking, so you don't know like what door you're entering, and you don't really know how to open a door. It's
okay, tangent time, real quick. Wasn't there something weird about that closet, though? Like, I remember when you lived there at that house, there was something about the closet that was like spooky.
I don't know. I mean, probably. This is a different house than my grandparents' house, by the way. If you guys follow our stories at all, it's not the Henrici house. This was one where I moved in with my dad and my stepsister and half-sister. And it had some weird vibes at times, but I don't remember specifically. I mean, just literally her clawing at the closet to try and get in the middle of the night. That might be what you're thinking of.
Okay, maybe that's perking up the old memory banks there.
It was super creepy. But yes, so someone just facing a wall, or a doll facing a wall, a teddy bear facing the wall, especially when that's not how you left it, is disturbing. So their brother gets them in contact with a psychic.
Like you do.
Right. Who calls from California, does a remote session, says, there's something in your house, but it's just a little girl. Don't be afraid. And she says, you just have to lay down the ground rules. She's a child. Tell her, pick up your toys when you're done using them.
Yeah.
And Deb is excited about this. She's interested in ghosts. She's like, yes, that would be so cool. We have a little girl ghost. She's sweet. I'll treat her like a child that she is.
Yeah.
I'll mother her.
But her husband is not as, like, excited about the idea.
He's apprehensive, and he grew up Catholic, so usually that is something dark.
Yes.
Catholics don't believe your loved ones even come down to visit you or leave messages. Or, that doesn't really go with that idea, that belief. So usually, if something is portraying as a little girl, it's demonic. It's trying to trick you.
Creepy.
By showing themselves as an innocent little girl. So right there, their paths of this experience start to like separate.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that a little bit more later. And the psychic also picks out the name Sally.
Which is interesting because, as we find out, like, that name comes up a few times from different people.
Right. And it already had about a week prior when the mom, Tony's mom, said, I know someone who used to live there. And their children had an imaginary friend named Sally. They would always blame any mess on Sally, anytime they were misbehaving and they got in trouble, they would say, Sally did it. I didn't do this. And their mom just thought it was someone imaginary. But now, like a week later, a psychic who does not know Tony's mom and has no connection with this story.
She's like 100 states away.
Yeah, and fully just calls in to do a remote session, meet them for the first time over the phone, and says, I see the little girl. She's very cute. Her name is Sally. So that's the second time this name comes up by two different sources.
I would be absolutely losing my mind at that point. Like, just that is too big of a coincidence. And of all the, like, little girl names that she could have just like plucked out of thin air. She right. lands on Sally, which yeah. is kind of on the nose for like that specific time period mm-hmm. when, you know, the little girl would have existed there.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know. I love that part.
Yeah. Weird side note tangent. The same sister of mine who would sleepwalk when she was a little girl would always name every single doll she had Sally. I mean, I didn't know anything about the Sally house at that time, right. but it was really cute. But in the mix of all of this, mm-hmm. between the psychic and the mother recalling the story, they have Tony's other brother over to visit, and something else happens where they already figured out the name is Sally. Tony sort of jokingly says, "Hey, Sally, if you're here, say cheese," and holds up a camera and snaps a photo. Mm-hmm. And as he snaps the photo, his brother sees another stuffed animal move, like in real time,
like on the
before
spot.
His eyes. Yes.
Okay.
And so they freak out. They try to run upstairs to tell Deborah.
And both of them are like majorly skeptical.
Right.
Her brother was like,
it was his
ghost,
brother.
No, yeah. thank you. Not into it.
Yes.
No way.
So they see this. They both try to run upstairs, but the brother is held back by some unseen force. And they pack up and they're like, we need to get out of here. That was too much. Like the fact that I can't move for a second. I mean, that could have been fear. Sometimes that does happen.
Lock up. Yep.
Yep. But he felt like he was being physically held by something he could not see.
Okay.
So they're packing up the baby and Tony is buckling the car seat just to leave for the day or like take a break from the house sure. and like recollect their thoughts.
Smart.
And as he's buckling the baby into the car seat in the house, this is one of the infant seats, he feels a burning sensation on his back, but he ignores it and they're in the mode to like get the F out of there. They get in the car, drive away. I don't know where they end up, probably one of the relatives' houses. And Deborah checks his back, and it has 3 huge scratch marks, like bloody scratch marks down his back. So they're terrified. They contact the psychic again, and they're like, now listen, lady. You told us this was a nice little girl ghost.
Yeah.
So what is the deal? Are you sure she's harmless? What is happening here? And Tony, of course, whose upbringing and faith tell him this is a demon, not a child, is like adamant about this. Like, now something is hurting me. There's no way this is an innocent little girl. Deborah defends the little girl. And she and the psychic both say, we just need to set rules. Maybe she got a little too excited in all of the commotion and just tried to kind of grab onto you because you were running away.
Sure.
And inadvertently scratched your back. Like, didn't know she could do that. So, anyway, another case for like Sally being a sweet, innocent girl, even though the evidence doesn't super suggest that at this time.
Yeah. And there's that whole thing with like on some of the ghost shows, you hear about like, oh, it's a mark of 3. It's mocking the Holy Trinity.
Right.
Like that's
it's okay. But that's also ridiculous. So everyone who's listening right now, hold out your hand in front of your face. Look at your hand. Your 3 middle fingers are longer than the rest of your fingers on your hand. If usually you go to scratch something, okay, now turn your hand around, form a claw. Those 3 middle fingers are going to be what leaves a mark.
Right.
In real life, non-haunting scenarios, that's just how it works. The connection to the Holy Trinity and the demonic thing of it being 3, I was just being descriptive. But it does set that tone.
Right.
And infers, because most of us have been programmed to believe this, that that's what that means.
Yes.
So thanks for pointing that out, actually. Debunked.
I was on that wavelength with you. I just wanted to like...
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't claim to be experts. Maybe everything is real and, you know, in the church teachings. We don't know. We're claiming not to know and to trust in the fact that no one really knows. That's all we're going to trust in. So
that's pretty accurate.
As evidence of, you know, general, what most people have.
General anatomy.
On their hands.
And or slash Wolverine claws.
Wolverine claws. Also, you know, those.
Still 3 though. So that, and yeah. You know, he's a good guy. So.
It just works like that.
Yeah.
But that is what happened. So Deborah's very into this and starts connecting with Sally. She starts to think of things as, like, she's supposed to be there taking care of Sally. And like we've said, Tony is having a different experience.
Mm-hmm.
He returns home from work on October 31st, Halloween, 1993.
That was a good year for Halloween.
Yeah. He opens the cupboard, gets out a glass, fills it with orange juice, takes a drink, and as he lowers the glass, he sees a little girl standing in the kitchen in front of him.
No, thank you.
His brain is not computing that it's a ghost. She's so corporeal looking, so clear to him, that he thinks for a moment that some little girl had just followed him inside.
Sure. Trick-or-treater.
But as he realizes, this girl is dressed in, like, period dress. It's a white lace dress. She has her hair pulled up in a bow. He's quickly realizing this looks off. And this all happens, like, instantaneously.
Right.
His brain's processing. So he drops the orange juice glass, and it breaks. And in that action, she disappears. Like, he looks up, and she's gone.
Ugh.
He does draw a sketch of what she looks like.
The sketch is so creepy.
Yeah, it's a pretty good sketch.
It's
funny,
good.
Because in an interview, he's like, you know, just like a little 10-minute sketch. Which is funny, like, he pointedly says that,
yeah.
Because it's actually quite a nice drawing.
Yeah.
Like, he has a talent, an aptitude for,
right,
for art, you can
tell.
No,
I just bang that out in, like, 10 minutes. No,
yeah,
big deal.
He does make sure that that's mentioned.
I'll sign it if you want.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of funny. But no, it is creepy. It looks like almost like a Victorian or, you know, 1800s doll, like,
yeah,
a porcelain doll. Big blue eyes, curly hair up in a little bow on top, and a high-collared, like, lace dress.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who he saw standing there. Was it Sally? You know, that's what they think.
Stands to reason.
So Deb is just continuing to connect with this entity and starts to feel, like, the cold spots around her. Like, if she's sitting doing something in the house or playing with the baby and there's suddenly a cold spot on her side.
Yeah.
She's like, aw, Sally's coming to snuggle. And
aww,
she, right. So
it's
she
so
thinks
cute,
that
actually.
They're, like, cuddling.
Yeah.
She'll talk to Sally as she comes into rooms. She buys Sally a gift.
Oh my God, this is my favorite part.
And wraps it. It's a doll. She wraps it up.
Spoilers.
Leaves it in the corner of the nursery, which, I don't know why, I wouldn't really want to encourage the ghost to be in the nursery.
Yeah, because they still have their own baby, is,
right,
like, in that nursery.
Right. So she leaves the room and comes back later to find the doll she had purchased for Sally was unboxed and in the baby's crib. In their baby Taylor's crib.
Right.
But she looks over, and the box is still where she left it, and fully intact and fully wrapped.
What?
This one, I would love to see something like this happen.
Yeah.
Because we wonder, you know, in experimenting and investigating these kind of things, like, what can they do? We,
yeah,
talked about this in the Esther Cox story,
mm-hmm,
where some of the ghosts in that house are said to have removed items from a locked trunk and bring full,
yeah,
tangible objects out of locked trunks, you know, breaking all the laws of what we believe,
yeah,
to be.
And things would, like, fall out of
thin air.
Thin air,
yeah,
yeah.
So somehow they believe the ghost of Sally got the doll out of the box without disturbing the packaging. And they found it laying in the baby's crib.
It's so creepy. Just like, okay, assuming that this is a real thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just imagine the thought process of, like, seeing the doll in the crib and then, like, double taking to the,
yeah,
the box. That, like, whoa. That's my favorite part of the story.
Yeah. And Deborah looked at it as, like, wow, amazing. Look what you can do.
Yeah, she, it talks about how she, like, was praising Sally for,
yeah,
this amazing thing that she did.
Yeah, and Tony's like, okay, yeah, look what she can do. Like, this is dangerous.
Yeah.
So, one night, I think it was during the holiday season, but they don't really specify. But based on the timeline of events, the Pikmins are having friends over for dinner. And in front of everyone at the table, like full-on witnesses, large scratches appear across Tony's forehead and even draw blood. So these are vastly different, once again, vastly different experiences.
So he's just sitting at the table, enjoying dinner, and like Doug across the table is like, what's on your forehead?
Yeah.
You know, and it's, oh my God, I'm bleeding. Why am I bleeding?
Right.
Three scratches.
Mm-hmm. Tony also experiences a woman, full-grown woman, walking through the house. He at first believes it's Deb and follows her downstairs, only to find out that it's not Deb. She's in another room, not even dressed for the day yet. And so he's having these weird experiences, the scratches, the kind of dark feelings. And now this woman, who's definitely not a little girl, and he's also seen the little girl, Sally.
Right.
So now there's another player in the mix here.
So he's seen Sally and this woman, but Deb has not seen, actually, like, seen
Correct.
Anything.
Yes.
Okay.
So Deb starts to chalk Tony's experiences up to sleep deprivation. They have a new baby, and she completely separates what he's going through from what she's going through. He thinks the scratches are a demonic entity,
mm-hmm.
and she thinks, no, impossible, Sally's a sweet little girl. I don't even know how she explains the scratch marks at first. But the rest of it, she thinks, like, you're just not getting enough sleep. There wasn't a woman walking through the house.
You're not getting enough sleep, which, as experts will tell you, leads to unusual scratches appearing on your body.
Yeah, but well, that's what I don't get. Like, you can hallucinate.
Sure.
But other people are witnessing what Tony is witnessing.
Right.
They see the scratch marks. They even watch them appear. So it's not even like he's just showing them later. So he's like under full attack.
Yeah, for real.
Later, they're taking a Christmas portrait, or, you know, photo,
mm-hmm.
like a posed Christmas photo, and a blurred ghostly figure appears in the picture. They send it off to the psychic, Barbara, and she says, oh, well, that's not even Sally. That's a whole different ghost. It's an adult woman, and she's a little cranky.
No way.
And yeah, and he's like, well, I did see a woman. I followed her through the house. I thought it was Deb, and it's not.
Okay, so just for validation's sake, when he sees that woman, he told Deb. And she was like, nah, you're...
Right, because he was like, whoa, I thought that was you. She's
yeah.
like, what do you mean? I'm in here getting dressed.
Okay, yeah. So basically what I'm getting at is it's not like they called the psychic and the psychic was like, oh yeah, there's a woman. And then he goes back and he's like, well, actually, I did see a woman a while ago. I just didn't
right.
tell you about it.
Right.
You know, like there's a timeline of events here that are being corroborated by their communication with the psychic.
Right. It's not that he's being influenced by what the psychic
exactly.
is saying.
Yeah.
Right. So Barbara, the psychic, starts to share their case with a few people, and it gets the attention of producers of a show called Sightings. And in July of 1994, the crew arrives at the Pikmin's home to film a four-part series on Sally.
That's huge.
Yeah.
I remember that show. That was a good show.
You do?
Yeah.
I didn't, but I watched the series
uh-huh.
on YouTube.
Yeah.
You can find it. It's called, like, The Ghost of the Heartland.
Oh, okay.
Their episode.
The episode
because
yeah.
they hadn't named it the Sally House at
right.
this point in the 90s. So it's really cool. It gave me, like, 90s nostalgia vibes, almost like the fake Inside Edition story on Casper.
Yes.
When yeah. the dad is, like, given his little spiel on what he does
mm-hmm.
as a ghost therapist.
Yeah. yeah.
So.
It's, now that I think about it, and because we were watching the show earlier, I feel like that show is where a lot of my, like, cursory knowledge of the paranormal came from.
Okay.
I think my dad was really into that show.
Okay.
And, you know, we just used to watch it when it was on, and it was always, like, one of those... Would you believe that there's a little girl in a house? And it has, like, this narrator guy, and it's always...
Yeah,
just
but
like,
it's cool.
It's well done,
it's,
though.
Yeah, it's presented, like investigative journalism. Yeah. It's, you know, a news anchor type of guy. But they also investigate. So they go to these places, they interview the people involved, and they bring in their own experts. So this was highly active on day one when they all watch scratches appear on Tony. Like right away.
Yeah.
Just during the interview process. He's scratched like a dozen times.
And it's the camera's on him the whole time. So initially with these like, oh, I'm being scratched things, it's the first thought is like, okay, well, he's doing it to himself when nobody's paying attention.
Yeah.
But when they start doing the filming, they have a crew on them the whole time.
Right. And the interviewer, as well as parapsychologist Howard Heim, witnessed these things in person. And the parapsychologist advised them after their series to maybe get rid of some of the encouragement, like the teddy bears, the things that the ghost is interacting with. Maybe like scale back on that stuff and stop encouraging the ghost, which of course is not something that Deborah wanted to hear.
Right.
They also called in the psychic Peter James. They didn't give him any knowledge of what they were there to investigate, and he immediately joined them, picked up the name Sally, and said he could see the little girl on the stairs.
Yeah.
Like right when he started.
Yeah, that part is really cool of the interview, because he's like at the bottom of the stairs and he's like, oh, I see her. She's right at the top of the stairs. And he's like pointing to the top of the stairs.
Says, look to the camera as if they can see her.
Yeah.
And then says, oh, Sally, is that your name? And then it pans over to the crew and the family, and they're all like astounded and smiling, like, I cannot believe he just picked that up.
Yeah.
So this is the third person to blindly come up with the name Sally.
Yeah.
So really cool. They also, when the psychic was there, he received like an electric shock feeling on his hand. And at the same time, Tony received scratches on his back. And as they sort of, a scratch like develops visually, they lift up his shirt and the letters MC are written on his back.
Yeah. And it's like square in the middle of his back.
And very clear. Like the exact same size lettering. Sometimes when you're dealing in paranormal cases and you're like, oh, what does this scratch mark look like? It says something.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a little far-fetched.
Sure. You're
trying to make it fit.
Yeah.
To what you think it should say. Which, by the way, it did not say Sally. I will point out that is like something that I thought was kind of interesting and credible. What is MC?
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with the line of thinking they were going with.
Right.
Which was
exactly.
This little girl.
Yeah. It's cool too, because on the video you see the letters sort of appear.
Right.
And at first, when we were watching it, I was like, is that a bite mark? What is that? And then that's where the C, like you can see like the top of the C and the bottom of the C
like
first.
The half moon shape of a bite.
Yeah. And then it fills in the rest of the way. And that gave me chills.
Yeah. And it was super clear lettering. And they think that maybe the MC had something to do with the original owner of the house, whose initials were MCF.
Oh, okay.
But just the MC appeared there. So we're not sure.
Yeah, and they never go back and like really put a solid answer to that one. Which, like you said, is kind of cool, because it's like, what does this mean?
Right. And if you're going to fake evidence,
it's not convenient.
Right. You want it to conveniently line up with the line of thinking that you're presenting, the narrative that you're putting out there. So they think maybe it was the original owner and that he's one of the ghosts there, perhaps.
Could be.
So something that slightly has to do with the original owner is one theory that his son, Dr. Charles Finney, had his medical practice in that house. And it's town legend, so they cannot fully corroborate this documentation-wise. It's town legend that a young girl was rushed in to his doctor's office with horrible abdominal pain. And she was just shrieking and screaming and uncomfortable. And the doctor quickly said, oh, this is appendicitis. I need to operate immediately. And before he could even get the anesthesia going, he cuts into her. So she is like fully awake, being sliced open on the operating table and dies there on the table. And supposedly her name is Sally. Now, I don't know if this story was the lore before the Sally name was picked up by the other people or since then.
Sure.
But it is even on their, like, official website of the for the house.
Yeah.
So just take that with a grain of salt, because we're not really sure if that's, like, the chicken or the egg situation.
But we do have, like, documentation that there was the doctor in the house.
Yes, that is real. That happened. It was the original owners, the person who built the house. It was his oldest son who took ownership of the home and had a practice there. And that's fully legitimate. And according to the show Sightings, their research did indicate that there was a young girl named Sally who died in the area in 1905. And records also indicate that Dr. Charles Finney leaves the house in 1906, just 1 year after this supposedly happened.
Interesting. So I wonder if maybe that event, like, prompted the whole thing. Like, he was like, I can't do this anymore. It was too traumatic.
But what's weird is that other research indicates that no one in the area was named Sally and died as a child. There's one person named Sally in the local cemetery, but she was in her mid-30s when she passed.
Okay.
So, I don't know, that's sort of conflicting evidence.
Yes, unless the woman that Tony sees is the actual age of Sally, and then, you know, because there's that whole thing about ghosts that can kind of present at whatever age they
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Sometimes, so maybe it's the same.
Yeah. Sometimes she comes through as her real age, and sometimes she is showing herself as a child.
Yeah.
That doesn't really keep in line with the child dying in the doctor's office, though.
Right.
Which, though, we have established as possibly just local lore.
Sometimes connecting dots is connecting just two dots instead of, like, a whole series of them.
Yeah, totally. So now let's dive further into the different experiences.
Okay.
Of Deborah and Tony.
Sure.
So as we mentioned, while all of this is happening and unfolding, Deb is bonding and connecting with who she believes to be Sally, the ghost of a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Totally innocent and someone who just needs to be mothered. She snuggles with the ghost, she talks to her, she interprets those cold spots as her just wanting to be close, and she buys her gifts. She's basically just one of the family. She also sets rules and says them aloud, like, clean up your toys.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Tony has a much darker experience. He's scratched almost every day. He hears voices and murmurings. He can't really make out what the voices are saying. He hears scratching from within the walls. Then things escalate for him, and they have the house cleansed after they do the sightings series.
Mm-hmm.
So a psychic comes forward and says, hey, I heard about your case. I can definitely cleanse your house for you. She does so. She asks them, is there any ghost here you want to stay?
Sure.
She's like, I see a little girl, Sally, a woman, and a man she describes to be a perfect gentleman.
Hmm.
And they're like, yes. Well, not they. Deb says, yes, Sally can stay. So she does the cleansing, tells the other ghost to move on, or however she does it. And that doesn't seem to help Tony.
Right.
He's still hearing the voices, only now they're clear.
Yeah.
He can make out what they're saying. And it's not good.
Yeah, it's real bad. And also, we're starting to get into, like, the classic startup of, like, possession cases, mm-hmm. where they're hearing voices and hearing scratching on the walls and, like, tapping and knocking. And
so that's what's interesting is we're not starting to. This has branched off this way from the beginning, if you think about it.
Sure.
While Deb is having these lighthearted experiences with a little girl, he is being scratched. He is hearing noises. He is disturbed. He's being drained of his energy and not sleeping. And one day, he enters the kitchen to see that a stray cat is in there, somehow. And it's drinking the milk out of one of their left-out cereal bowls. Now, instead of shooing the cat away, Tony's very strange automatic reaction is to grab a knife from the butcher block.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't just scare the cat away with his knife. He fully attacks the cat, stabbing it to death in their kitchen. He leaves the kitchen only to return later and see the scene and freak out and not remember that he was the one who did that.
Whoa.
So he claims he was blacked out, murdered this cat casually in the kitchen, and he panics. He's like, I must have done this. I was the one in here. And so he cleans up the mess before Deborah and the baby come home. And he is like, we have to get out of this house.
Yeah.
He fully attributes this to the voices he's been hearing and the draining of his energy and the demonic feelings that he's getting. So he thinks he's being overtaken at this point.
So at this point, he's starting to really worry that Deb and the baby could be in danger from what he's feeling and experiencing.
Yeah, and whatever's driving him to sort of this dark place.
Yeah.
Not sort of, like fully this dark place.
And just another thing that I've noticed about this too, that is similar to other kind of like possession cases. It's interesting that Deb is having this really like nice, warm experience, but she, at the same time, she's totally like telling Tony that he's like what he's experiencing is not valid.
Right.
So it's further isolating him,
mm-hmm.
which is like totally like tactics.
Right.
Like gnarly evil tactics mm-hmm. happening against Tony.
Right. Super weird for sure. So one day after he tells Deb they need to get out of the house, it's kind of right after this cat incident, he's leaving his bedroom and he's struck by an unseen force and knocked into the banister so hard that it breaks several of the railings out.
Whoa.
And he almost goes over the banister down to the first floor. But he catches himself. So this is the thing that somehow gets Deborah's attention. And she's like, all right, we can leave. So they moved out 2 weeks later.
Wow.
And they currently still live in the town, only a few minutes away from the Sally house.
Interesting.
And they're a little bit better, but things continue. So Tony is still under some sort of dark attachment, mm-hmm. I think, because he explains more recently that he has woken up with his clothes on fire. He has blacked out and found himself walking to the house, standing outside the Sally house, just staring up at it.
Oh, man, that gave me chills.
Mm-hmm. And he feels compelled to return to the house all the time.
Okay, that's another, like, classic symptom of, like...
Yeah. So, I don't know what can be said about those two different experiences. You're saying, like, it's sort of tactical. I'm wondering if maybe just the outlook of each thing
mm-hmm.
attributed to this psychologically.
Sure.
Where she was super stoked to have a ghost and her experience was lighthearted and fun. He was like, this means demonic, I'm Catholic. And it turned out to unfold the exact way that his beliefs told him it unfolds.
Mm-hmm.
But many other people have witnessed the happenings, the haunting activity at the house. It is now owned by the Chamber of Commerce. And they host tours. Several ghost hunting shows and investigators have been in there.
Yep.
So there's a lot of footage you can see. And they have captured EVPs and visuals. And it remains to be creepy and it remains to put out paranormal evidence.
Yep.
Even without the couple living there.
Right.
Though no like life-threatening injuries have been sustained or scratches like that of Tony's have been sustained since they moved out by any of the visitors or to any of the visitors.
Right. Man.
But it's still a very active house.
Let's go.
I'm going to pass on that one. Because Kansas, I don't know. We would literally just be going to Kansas to see the Sally house, which I guess I wouldn't fully turn down.
Like how far into Kansas is it? Is it, like, right on the edge where you can just, like, swing through real quick? Or is it, like, dead center? You got to get really far in there.
I don't even know.
I'll have to check a map.
But I don't know. This is definitely one that has turned out a lot of evidence and not just associated with the family who lived there during the height of the hauntings.
Yeah.
Which in a lot of these cases where you're saying like possession or poltergeist, once the family who's most affected moves out, the activity stops.
Yeah.
Like with, let's think, Amityville.
Mm-hmm.
The Amityville house has been lived in since the Lutz family.
Yep.
And those people are like, nothing happens here. I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's an interesting phenomenon in of itself, where it's like, is it the person or is it the place?
Right. And in this instance, it seems to be both, because they're still experiencing some of this darkness. And in interviews since, the Pickmans have gone back to like conduct interviews and see the house again and show people around. So maybe that's why they're still experiencing it, because they're still returning. They're still feeding into this and going and visiting and opening themselves up to the attachment of whoever's in there.
Yeah, that's got to be, you know, part of it. If you have these profound experiences in a place,
mm-hmm.
it seems like the case is like with the Lutz family, like they wear off after you leave the place for a while or whatever. But if you're continuing to go back and kind of poke at it,
yeah,
it's interesting.
Well, let's focus on the fun side of it, the nice way that Deborah mothered this ghost without question. And we will also say that today is Mother's Day, so mm-hmm. happy Mother's Day to all of the moms out there. I know Mother's Day can be complex for a lot of people. So just, I don't know, feel that out however you can and however you need to, but we're sending out love for sure. We want to let everyone know to check out our podcast, which is now being featured on Sundown Radio. So that is Sundown 96.6. We're on there every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern
time. Yep.
But definitely check out all the other great shows they have on there.
It's literally like, if you're into spooky stuff, it's the dream radio station.
Right.
Like they stream spooky stuff constantly, and
like retro vintage advertisements, and it's really, really cool.
It's just great. I don't know if there's like such a thing as like sound aesthetic, but it has a good sound aesthetic.
There is,
you know,
and they've nailed it.
Yeah, it's perfect, and we're so excited to be part of that.
For sure. So check us out there, and continue to follow us, like, share, rate. You know, just help get our name out there so we can reach more people and they can find us if they want to.
Yeah. If you need to get a hold of us, you can find us on social media at Fright Life Paranormal. You can drop us a line on email at frightlifeparanormal@gmail.com. And we have a pretty cool website, which is frightlifeparanormal.com, where you can listen to our podcast. You can see the merch that we have available, and you can kind of keep up with all our various contact activity there as well.
Yeah, we have a lot of projects kind of in the works, especially coming up this spooky season,
mm-hmm.
which we know like it's always spooky season for all of us, but the more widely considered spooky season of, you know, September through Halloween time.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of things coming up for that time frame.
Our good friend Aaron Deese wrote a book called The Texas Dogman Triangle, and that is available for pre-order now.
Yes.
And you should definitely grab a copy, like, as soon as possible, because it is going to be great.
I cannot wait.
You can follow our friend Aaron on social media at Hey Strangeness, and you can actually pre-order his book on Amazon right now. It's live.
We hope you've had a frightful time with us here at Fright Life, a paranormal podcast.
Thanks so much for listening, you guys. We'll see you next time.